Wisconsin's 2016 U.S. Senate race between Senator Ron Johnson and former Senator Russ Feingold is heating up. Today, the National Journal ranked Johnson's seat the second most likely in the country to change parties in the coming election. That's down from the publication's spring rankings when it's listed the seat as the most likely to switch. Criticism of both politicians has been quick to come in recent months. Feingold has called on Johnson to sign a pledge not to accept advertising from outside political groups, which he hasn't done so far. Johnson's camp has criticized Feingold for spending the large majority of his political action committee's funds on fundraising and salaries, as well as increasingly accepting donations from outside of Wisconsin in spite of a previous pledge. Most recently, Democrats have filed a complaint against Johnson for using his Senate page to attack Feingold in possible violation of ethics rules. Here with us to break down the latest in the Senate race is Lily Gorin, professor of political science at Carroll University. Lily, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, Rob. It's great to be here.
So why are analysts picking this seat as one of the likeliest to change parties in 2016?
Well, it's Ron Johnson is a first-term senator. He was elected in that 2010 wave of, you know, sort of anti-health care, anti-Obama sentiment. And some of the other folks who are looking to run for re-election this time around are also coming out of that 2010 wave. And so you see a different electorate also in a presidential year than you do in a non-presidential year, as your most recent guest was talking about as well.
And so this has maybe more to do with voting trends and timing than the difference between the two candidates in a way?
Well, I mean, I think that there are probably vulnerabilities on both sides with regard to both Senator Johnson and former Senator Feingold. But I do think that the difference between the presidential election turnout in Wisconsin and the 2010 sort of turnout was substantial in terms of the demographics and the number of people voting, the percentages and so forth.
Well, you mentioned vulnerabilities for both candidates. Let's go into those. Let's start with the current incumbent, Senator Johnson.
Yeah, I mean, Senator Johnson has had a somewhat lower profile among sort of first-term senators. I mean, again, when you're sort of comparing Senator Johnson to somebody like Ted Cruz, who's also a first-term senator, you see a pretty distinct difference, obviously, in terms of profiles, high or low profile. But, you know, the first-term senators tend to be more vulnerable in general. And the question is also what are they doing in terms of campaigning in their state? What have they brought home to their state during that first 6 years that they've been in the Senate? How has that term gone? You know, what have they done in terms of campaigning back at home? How familiar are people with them? And I think that's unfortunately for Senator Johnson, one of the difficulties that he's facing is that some of the recent polls have shown that people are not that familiar with him.
And then on Senator Feingold's side, what kind of vulnerabilities are there?
Well, Senator Feingold obviously is very well known for the McCain-Feingold legislation, which was a campaign finance reform legislation that he very high-profilely co-sponsored with Senator John McCain with regard to trying to limit a lot of the sort of money in politics that he originally, when he first ran for Senate, says is one of the difficult with regard to politics in the United States, and he's still talking about that. But he's also been critiqued recently with regard to one of the PACs that he established after he was defeated by Senator Johnson and what that money has been going towards, as well as potentially taking or soliciting money or raising funds from outside of Wisconsin.
Now, I'm billing this so far as a Feingold-Johnson rematch. It's still early. There could be other people in the primary on either side. But given the two, there's an incumbent here, a former incumbent, and a big name in Wisconsin politics on the other side. Do you think it's likely that we'll see significant candidates with a chance to make a primary race of it?
I don't think so. I mean, I wouldn't rule it out. But, you know, it's usually more difficult these days in terms of mounting a primary campaign in general. But you've seen some of them that have been successful, more successful on the Republican side in the last couple of election cycles. But where Ron Johnson sits on the sort of political spectrum, I don't expect that we would see somebody sort of, you know, primarying him, as the term has now become a verb, from the right. He was elected to some degree as a kind of Tea Party candidate, and so I don't know that you would see somebody sort of taking him on in the primary. In terms of Feingold, there's obviously been some movement to try to recruit Russ Feingold to run for office again. So I don't know, again, that there would be a movement within the Democratic Party in Wisconsin, just like I'm not anticipating one in the Republican Party in Wisconsin, to primary either of these candidates.
Talking to Lily Gorin from Carroll University about Wisconsin's U.S. Senate race 2016, a very likely rematch. Ron Johnson, the current incumbent, his predecessor, who he beat 5 years ago now, Russ Feingold, challenging him from the Democratic side. Well, let's get into the campaign finance issues, because that's been a lot of the back and forth so far. Shortly after Russ Feingold said he was entering the race, he asked Ron Johnson to agree to a pledge that neither of them would accept funds of help, advertising support from third-party political groups. Wanted him to sign on to a pledge that we saw in a Massachusetts Senate race, a similar pledge, having penalties if that kind of third-party advertising happens. Senator Johnson hasn't agreed at this point. So what's the idea behind that? Is this a campaign tactic, or is this really a good campaign finance kind of thing?
Well, you know, I think it's a bit of both, I would suggest. I mean, it was the deal that was made between Elizabeth Warren and Scott Brown in Massachusetts. The idea basically is to keep the campaign, keep the election within the state, and so that the money to support the buying of advertisement and campaigning in general is coming from inside the state, not from external national groups that are not connected to the state at all. And both, you know, there are assets and difficulties with regard to this kind of pledge for both the candidates. I said this in 2010 as well, that given some of the costs of running a Senate race, if Russ Feingold wasn't going to be willing to take, quote, outside funds, it was unlikely that he would be able to win a Senate election in the state of Wisconsin again. And in 2010, he lost.
And he's in a bit of a bind, and he's been, as you mentioned, taking heat, not just for his PAC, though, but for currently, it looks like more of his money so far has come from out of state than in Wisconsin, something he had said he wouldn't do in previous elections. He isn't living up to some of the ideals, his critics say, that he had established in previous elections. So is he hypocritical in a way if he doesn't live up to those old standards?
Well, you know, it certainly is a critique that can be made with regard to taking money from people who are outside the state of Wisconsin. At the same time, that if it's your campaign committee, you can send the money back, or you can, you know, try to get people inside the state of Wisconsin to give more money. It's a difficult conundrum in which you find yourself in terms of the sort of the outside groups and the way that campaign finance laws and rules work with regard to sort of external groups running their own ads. That's a different issue, and that's really what the pledge, the Badger pledge, is about. And you know, Feingold first ran for Senate, I believe it was in 92, and said, you know, at that point he wanted to take more money from people who were in Wisconsin than outside of Wisconsin. And since that time, we've seen, of course, the Citizens United court case, which has changed the dynamics rather dramatically with regard to funding and spending in campaigns across the country.
Now, some people feel very passionately about these issues, about campaign finance, but for the voting populace as a whole, are they caring about all this back and forth on where the money comes from?
Well, you know, it's sort of very complicated in terms of the laws and the regulations, and a lot of that can get really deep into the so-called weeds. But at the same time, Russ Feingold has, you know, made a lot in his political career with regard to trying to limit the money in politics, particularly in campaigns. And so while there's a lot of complication with regard to election law, for Feingold in particular, this is a little bit of a more tender vulnerability, if you want, with regard to how he operates his campaign and what it looks like, in part because he's made a name for himself by trying to sort of work against big money in politics.
We're talking to Lily Gorin, professor of political science at Carroll University, about the latest on Wisconsin's 2016 U.S. Senate race. Today, the National Journal listed the seat as the second most likely in the country to flip parties. We'd like to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Campaign finance, as we've mentioned, has featured heavily so far in the race. Do you want to see the two candidates agree not to accept third-party support? Why or why not? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We continue our conversation with Lily Gorin, professor of political science at Carroll University, about the latest news on Wisconsin's 2016 U.S. Senate race. Today, the National Journal said, hey, this is the second most likely seat in the country to change parties. Attacks from both sides have gotten off to an early start. You can join in now at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the rematch between Russ Feingold and Ron Johnson? What guidelines do you think the candidates should follow for campaign fundraising and spending? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Lily, in this race, I think back to our last Senate race, Tammy Baldwin, Tommy Thompson. Tommy Thompson, a popular figure. He won a lot of elections for governor by big margins. He came in with a fairly decent approval rating, I think, coming into that Senate race, and ultimately lost. Is that worrisome for Russ Feingold in kind of a similar position from the other side?
Sure. I mean, I think that there's a difficulty in regard to, you know, trying to have a second career in politics. Famously, it was said that nobody ever has a second career in politics, except then Richard Nixon had one of the most famous second careers in politics. But you know, Tommy Thompson had also not run a campaign for an elected office for some time when he did come into the race against Tammy Baldwin. And I think that may be somewhat of a difference between Feingold, who ran in a race 6 years ago. Tommy Thompson had spent time in the W. Bush administration. He'd been, sort of out of the public domain for a little while, also in the private sector. And so you see a little bit of this going on right now with some of the folks who are running for president. And Jeb Bush hasn't run in a campaign for over a decade, I believe. And so some of it is, you know, sort of getting the kinks out, getting used to the campaign trail again. And to some degree, Tommy Thompson hadn't run for a statewide race in Wisconsin for some time before he ran in that Senate race in 2012. And so there are some similarities that should potentially give Feingold some pause, or at least, you know, make him pay some attention to some of the problems that Thompson faced. But it is a little bit of a different creature, I think, in this Senate race as well.
Go to our callers now. We've got George on the line in Green Bay. George, hi.
Hi. I appreciate the show. I just wanted to mention that Russ Feingold has certainly demonstrated a very important willingness to fund a campaign without the special interest groups. I'm very concerned about the current political system in our country. The millions and billions of dollars being pumped in by special interests can only obligate those that are benefiting from those funds, and obligate them in such a way that we have a dysfunctional Congress. We have people representing special interests, therefore not negotiating for us individuals. I think it really contributes a lot to our lack of confidence in our politicians. Our system appears broken if we don't rectify the funding sources.
George, thanks for the call. So that's an issue that I imagine Russ Feingold would try to run on. Do you think it would resonate with voters? Do you think he can make that case again, Lily Gorin?
Well, you know, I think that the issue of money in politics is a very complicated one, and it's one that does engage a lot of voters because they see people who are donating large sums of money. I mean, you heard this from Donald Trump last week at the Republican debate that, you know, he gave a bunch of money to Hillary Clinton when she was running for office, and she had to come to his wedding as a result of that. I mean, it's sort of it's not exactly how it usually works as well in terms of what do people want when they donate a lot of money to a political campaign. They don't usually want you to come to their wedding, I think. They usually want some policy outcome. But, you know, there is this question of what it is that big donors want or big, you know, sort of super PACs want when they're donating to campaigns for Senate, for House, for presidential campaigns. It usually means access. And oftentimes it means that the candidate is willing to support policies that are, you know, that are pursued by these super PACs or big donors. And so that's where, you know, the regular voter who doesn't have a lot of money, like me and many of us who are probably listening to the show right now, our vote is not to some degree as valuable as somebody who can write a check for $1 million.
Back to our callers now with Anna in Madison. Anna, hi.
Hi. So I was just wondering your thoughts on whether if Senator Johnson does agree to, you know, not take the money from the third party, if that will actually benefit former Senator Feingold. Like, it seems like he thinks it will.
Oh, interesting. So he wouldn't have as much in his toolkit in a way, Lily.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the pledge is an interesting one, in part because, you know, Senator Johnson is fairly wealthy, and I believe he spent a pretty sizable amount of money of his own in the 2010 election, and so that the pledge wouldn't preclude that, him spending his own money, and Feingold has made some money on books and so forth, and consulting, and so, you know, the pledge is about sort of keeping other people who have super PACs and really deep checkbooks from contributing. And it probably would be something that both Johnson and Feingold would have to figure out how to work around in terms of the money coming into their campaign would be less.
And very briefly, Lily, given this might be a big race for control of Senate, it could be a lot of money coming in from around the country here.
Exactly. I mean, the National Journal article is pegging it as the top race or the second most, you know, sort of contentious race. Wisconsin has been a swing state in presidential years. So you're going to see money coming into the state through other areas as well. And the Senate race is one that would potentially decide who has the majority in the Senate, the Democrats or the Republicans. And so there's going to be a lot of money sloshing around in Wisconsin.
We'll leave it there, Lily. Thanks for joining us. That was Lily Gorin, professor of political science at Carroll University, talking about Wisconsin's 2016 Senate race.